time to see his dad when he's 12, I almost think as a power play. Like, because if it were a 12-year-old going back into the past and trying to tell a 13-year-old what to do, maybe it would have been different, but a 13-year-old telling a 12-year-old what to do, like, psychologically, he's got the upper hand. We also see Lewis punch Wilbur as children, and I just wonder, does that still count as, like, your dad beating you if your dad's technically a year younger than you?
Well, once people start taking light speed space missions, we'll find out.
when Lewis catches Wilbur spying on him, he's acting like a pigeon for some reason. I don't really get that. And when he asks him, like, hey, why are you acting like a pigeon? He's like, quiet, they're watching. They're always watching, they're always listening. And then shortly after, when he's trying to figure out what happens in his past, this quote of the truth will set you free is kind of pushed in here. But I thought just they're watching, they're listening. Maybe this is a DARPA thing. Maybe because if there is a they who's watching and listening, the they is likely also created by Lewis, right? Lewis is the one that created the AI derby hat and created the time machine and created the MK Ultra helmet that reads your memories. So it seems that he would also be the one that would create this ever sort of persistent, like, surveillance state.
I wonder if he has a front man, you know, because we got your Steve Jobs, your Elon Musk, where they don't really invent stuff themselves. So maybe he's supporting one of these technocrats of 2037.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see him. You don't see Lewis. So Lewis is the guy that actually made the Tesla. So who's his Elon that, like, buys the company and turns him into a face? I don't know. Maybe that's Goob.
No, I have a feeling Goob's not doing that well, though. That's what, because the orphanage closes and then he just stays there for 30 years.
Well, also there's a scene where he tries to get the bad guy, the Snidely Whiplash version of Goob, adopted by the family, but he also goes back into the past again and tells Goob to, like, wake up or something, and Goob. So the whole, it's that Goob keeps getting beaten up because he's sleeping and he sucks at baseball, but he goes back and he tells Goob, like, hey, wake up, while he's on the field, and he wakes up and he catches the ball and he saves the game. But I doubt Goob becomes, like, a professional baseball player, but it does, I would assume, stop him from becoming Snidely Whiplash. Now, genetics are the same. He's still going to look exactly like Snidely Whiplash. He might just not wear, like, the black trench coat and the black hat and the baseball jersey under it. Now he's just walking around in a jersey. But yeah, we don't really find out what happens to good Goob. We only find out what happens to bad Goob.
Yeah. We don't get back to the future. Well, that's where, I guess, maybe making this, they thought there was going to be a direct-to-video sequel. So they might have been like, oh, we'll catch up there. And then that never happened. And then this movie was memory hold because nobody remembers it. I mean, I'm not saying it was intentionally memory hold. I'm just, like, it literally fell into one because we're the first people that have watched this movie for 10 years.
There's also a couple of these critiques that the movie writes about itself. Like, for example, I'm trying to think of another one that did this recently, but in this movie, the bowler hat man, he sends a hat into, like, take over this company or to, like, sell the mind control machine to this corporation. And at a certain point, the hat is like, I don't think you thought this through well enough. So he gives up on that idea, and then he goes back into the past and he kidnaps a dinosaur and he brings a dinosaur into the future, and then he tries to get the dinosaur to go in and, like, disrupt and steal from Lewis to kind of just, like, destroy his life. And then the dinosaur says the same thing. He's like, I don't think you thought this through very much. And by the time the dinosaur said it, I thought it was basically one writer talking to another writer in the form of a script, and it just got baked into the actual movie. Like, it was actually, like, a footnote saying, hey, you didn't think this through very well. And someone was like, we should totally put that in the movie. That would be so funny. What a great inside joke.
Well, I guess it's what you do when you've backed yourself into a corner with your story thread. Now, here's a part where a bit of the snark, I guess, got taken out, though, because this did not have a snarky opening like the last two mainline Disney films, right? And right. I think this is the first time we've seen the Steamboat Willie intro, because it's the like 80th anniversary or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, that stood out too. Honestly, this movie lacks a lot of the snark, and it's very much like a optimistic movie. It's like a feel good movie.
Like I guess
about orphans being beaten.
Yeah, I guess hopefully I won't eat my words. I think looking at the list going forward, it should be fine. But we're kind of at the, I guess we've passed the low point. Although we are watching A Christmas Carol next week, so I'll get back to you about that. But I haven't seen Bolt. Bolt might be the only one where I'm like, I don't know what that's going to be like. It seems like we start climbing back up the hill, but it's now a digital hill from this point, for the most part.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, this is probably the most optimistic, happy-go-lucky movie, not just Disney movie and not just animated movie, that I've ever seen, that is about orphans being beaten and AI enslaving humanity. It's actually done in a very optimistic way.
Oh, it's very bright and shiny, isn't it? That's why I'm thinking so much about like grown-up Cornelius, because I'm like, man, this movie's so nice and shiny with concepts like that. I bet he's up to bad stuff.
Right. Yeah, there's got to be some yang to that yin, right?
Right. And we're just getting the nice shiny bauble part of it all. So, but yeah, this is let's see. I guess this is maybe Bold is too, but we're getting near the end of the Disney trying to really make their own like boys adventure stuff, because they're trying to get boys in their movies. And not too long after this, it's like, well, why don't we just buy Marvel and Star Wars instead? And I guess that
they kind of suck at it, to be honest. They really kind of suck at it.
We've got Atlantis, which Atlantis is quite good. We got this. What were the other ones? There's a Treasure Planet, which I can barely remember, to be honest. I really went to Treasure Planet being like, oh, this will be an undiscovered gem, you know, but it did kind of just wash through my brain and I'd forgotten
it. I remember Atlantis. It, but yeah, the movie as a whole doesn't do it as much.
Right.
And Atlantis then, probably is the best example out of all those of like a boy adventure movie.
And then they just get confused for a few movies with Brother Bear and Home on the Range, right? So that's like, we don't know what to do. And Chicken Little, we don't know what to do digitally now. So it does seem a little bit of purpose is getting reinstilled starting here. And we'll see what Bolt does a little later.
What else? I have a note here that Lewis absolutely did create Terminator. He did create Skynet, because we see a very specific scene when the AI bowler hat thrust its spiky little hand through the chest of the family robot, like kills him instantly. Like the hand just bursts through. So now you know that these bowler hats are 100% capable of the worst kind of violence you could imagine. Because the implication there is that if it was just like a foot to the left, that would have been a kid's chest that this robot like blade hand had just went through and like ripped a hole out of. So he basically made Terminators, right? Little flying Terminators.
Yeah, I guess I'm still thinking more of the Matrix robots, the little squid things, just because, you know, they're not.
No, I was thinking of Minority Report, which also has these like little metal tentacle creatures that can like slide through air vents and under doors, and then they jump on your face and they scan and maybe even take out your eyeballs.
Oh, yes. I remember watching that with a girlfriend once who hated eye stuff, and she was just flipping out during that scene.
Rough scene, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know it was coming. I think it was like the first time I saw it. Maybe it was theater? I don't remember. It was a while ago, but yeah.
Here's a question that I had, that when we see the progression, Goob is describing how he loses this baseball game and no one wants to adopt him and his life just spirals and he ends up staying at the orphanage and the orphanage shuts down. And then he's just like living in this sort of abandoned orphanage. If Lewis is doing so well and he liked that orphanage so much, like why didn't Lewis keep that orphanage open? That almost seems like something that he would have done if he was truly altruistic. So two things: either Lewis is actually pretty dark hearted somewhere deep down and wants the orphanage to fail, or the orphanage was a horrible, rotten, traumatic place, and that's why Lewis let it sort of deteriorate. There's really no other explanation here that made sense to me.
Does that mean Goob's just completely off the grid? Like, they do make it seem like he just sits in this room in an abandoned orphanage, you know, just like mega squatting, you know, and aging. Like, it's a montage to make show age, so, but it almost gives you the feeling that he literally doesn't leave this room. He obviously has to, but to get food and stuff, but he's off the grid. I mean, does he quit school at that point? Just sit around the room most of the time? Go steal some bread?
He turns into an adult. Yeah, it shows him going from a child into an adult, still living in this abandoned orphanage. So yeah, his trauma has linked him so closely to this place that he can literally not escape mentally or physically.
Yeah, you'd think at age 16 he'd at least start running tricks or something, you know.
All right, turn into a whorehouse.
Yeah, sure, why not? It'd become a pimp.
A one-man whorehouse is basically what I meant.
One-man whorehouse, stud house.
But yeah, why do you think Lewis lets the orphanage just shut down and crumble? If that was the place that was clearly taking care of him, and even though he's going on 130 of these freaking adoption interviews and he's not landing any of them, that means the orphanage kind of becomes his real home and family.
Maybe he just kind of forgot about the orphanage. He becomes successful. He's got a family. It just kind of recedes in his mind. I mean, him and Goob don't get along that well. It's like, you know, my freshman university roommate, we got along fine, but we had zero in common, so we didn't have much to talk about, you know?
Yeah, I get it. I mean, come to think of it, it doesn't seem that Lewis is much of a social butterfly at all. Like, I don't know if he would get along with anybody, except for maybe his wife and his foster parents. But even then, it seems that they're just more enamored that this dude is smart enough to create like a mind control machine and a time machine.
I've brought up a few times the student that he's like 12 now, that's like a genius and completely impossible kind of legend, right? He'll show up and build a working gun out of paper and rubber bands and then start shooting people with it. So that's like the real life version of this guy. Like, I'm like, this kid is going to become a James Bond villain and have a super layer at some point.
Right. This movie is actually the bowler hat being put on you. And now you're living in this optimistic reality, but you're actually like murdering and like just mowing down huts in a third world country on behalf of like your corporate overlord or something. But you, right, to you, it's just a nice Disney movie.
Right. But yeah, there's so much.
And there's like Ender's Game, kind of.
Yeah, if you just put a little spin on that baseball, you've got a very different movie. So maybe it is kind of like Terminator for children in a way. I mean, we got the time travel. We got the killer robot. So, yeah.
I'm going with that. Yes, Meet the Robinsons is Terminator for kids.
Because especially when they show the apocalyptic version of the future, I mean, that's just for what, 30 seconds? It's like straight up like Matrix Terminator dark. I mean, for an animated Disney movie, it is. Obviously, it's not blood and guts, but crushed skulls. We don't get those, I don't believe.
They should have started with that. Yeah, just like a bowler hat crushing skulls.
Rolling over them and putting little puncturing little holes in them,
because it's implied, right? It's implied that actually happens. They just don't show you the micro.
And as a grown person watching a movie, when you're watching that part of the movie, you're kind of like, you know, subliminally adding that in yourself, I think. So you're watching like, oh, I've seen this before, so I'm bringing that in as well.
And we've also, at that point, we've already seen the little razor blade robot hand go through someone's chest. So like, you know that this is not just a mental enslavement. They're hurting you.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to bring up is they use the Incredibles a bit for animating humans. Oh, other than Finding Nemo, there we go, the Incredibles. For animating humans, I was also thinking of Syndrome, a little bit of a similar villain arc. I don't think it's a knockoff, but
Syndrome? It's
a little. Syndrome was the villain in The Incredibles, where Mr. Character. Incredible tells him to go away as a kid, and then he becomes the ultimate villain of the movie. Much darker in Goob, I guess, because he's actually murdering everyone. But
yeah, I mean, the every one of these Disney movies, I think at this point, are all based on some like well-known tropes. There's not a lot of like original storylines. What's original is just maybe the characters they put. Hey, now Grandpa wears his clothes backwards. That's sort of the level of originality that we're coming to expect, I think, for a lot of this.
No, for the NLP reason, I almost feel like I should go watch that middle section again, and maybe, you know, if you take it from a surrealist point of view, there might be a few deeper things in there, you know?
Well, yeah, well, I mean, I think just the whole premise of your son going back in time to like bring his dad into the future, there's something deeper about that that's worth exploring too, because they violate almost every single rule. You're not supposed to touch each other. You're not supposed to introduce yourself to your other self. And in this movie, we see all that happen. And I guess there's one other unexplained, maybe it's just children's book logic, but Wilbur tells Lewis not to take his hat off and not to show his hair to anyone. And I thought there was going to be some big payoff that, like, you know, no, like,
Blondes are extinct.
right, or like anti-Holocaust, like somebody came in and like just destroy all the blondes and blue-eyed children. Like, we need to get them out of here before something bad happens. But no, it's just that his hair is just slightly styled a certain way, that the dad's hair is also slightly styled. So no one can recognize that young Lewis is also old Lewis until they see his hair. I didn't get the reason for that. Is do two people never have the exact same haircut anywhere in this new reality of the future? That feels like there's a like a fascist aspect to it. Are you not allowed to share a hairstyle with the society's like master?
No, it's like North Korea, where you go into the barber and there's 1 through 15, and you choose one of those numbers, and you're supposed to choose Kim Jong-un's hairstyle, of course.
That would kind of be funny though, if that North Korea was so locked down that everyone literally dressed and looked exactly like him, like the same haircut, the same outfit, everything. That would be kind of cool and surreal.
Unfortunately, they won't be the same size, but.
Right, but I mean just having like the same aesthetic across the board.
Some being John Malkovich stuff going on. Yeah, sure. I could get down with that.
The
Here,
movie
fruit
ends, like I
hat.
mentioned, with this quote. Throughout the whole movie, Lewis's catchphrase is kind of a cheesy one. He just keeps saying, "Keep moving forward," which I
Just
think can
keep
also be,
swimming. We just got that a few movies ago.
it could be, it, well, yeah, it's the same as we got, "Just keep swimming, just keep swimming." They're both very dark. This one I think could be very dark, because especially "keep moving forward" is like, ignore the fact that your roommate in the orphanage for 13 years was being brutally beaten every day of his life and showing up with panda eyes, and then he's basically reaching out like, "Hey Lewis, you know, I'm having a real hard time here, man." And Lewis is just like, "Just keep moving forward, just keep moving forward," just like ignores the fact that this guy is being abused nonstop. But that "keep moving forward" is really from a Walt Disney quote. The full quote, which they show at the end of the movie, is, "We keep moving forward, opening up new doors and doing new things. We're curious, and curiosity keeps leading us down new paths." Walt Disney.
Like being a weapons manufacturer inventor.
Right, and working on propaganda. And oh, and on the propaganda note, this is actually interesting too, is that
I
William
think I know where he's
Joyce,
going with this.
the guy that made the original movie and worked on this one and did storyboards for Toy Story and everything, he was in the Society of Illustrators, which is, I wouldn't say a secret society, but it's a very exclusive society based in New York. And one of the members, one of the earlier members of the Society of Illustrators, is the guy that wrote the or that drew the Uncle Sam propaganda war poster. And they were actually one of the most active in creating U.S. propaganda in World War II, was the Society of Illustrators. Now, this would have predated William Joyce's time, but like that, this is just adding more evidence to that concept that anything that has any sort of power influence does end up working directly for the military at some point.
Oh, okay. No, I had a different thing because they show Canada as a state. And just before I started this movie, I see this article online that President Trump keeps calling Trudeau governor.
I like that too.
So I was just like, huh, what? Why is this movie connecting with the article I just read? That doesn't make sense. So that's how I live my that's living your life synchromistically, I guess, you know? Past, present, future, doesn't matter, it all connects.
And is it all of Canada becomes a state, or is it just like a little chunk of it?
No,
If
I
we're
think they should.
voting, I think that they can keep French Canada.
I just watched a video about Saint Pierre and Melion. That was interesting though. That's real France in Canada. That's actually French. It's a couple of French islands that are just south of something.
I believe that there's certain places in Quebec that like they have to be in French. Like they have to put like all their signage in French and speak predominantly. I think it's
French. Across Canada, the signs are in French and English. Like even if you're in like British Columbia, the signs are in both languages.
That would be hell.
Now, I had a coworker several years ago who was from Quebec, and I guess his first language actually was French, but I mean his English was fine. In fact, the other coworker said he was the most American guy they'd ever met, even though he is French Canadian.
I think I could debate that, but we'll see.
No, he just had a lot of bluster, you know. Nice guy, but a lot of bluster. So he talked hard and forcefully. Hey. Not angrily, but yeah, this is an interesting dude. But anyway, that was my experience with folks from Quebec, so which was surprising. Okay, Canada. Anyway, I think they showed, because they show a map at one point, and don't they show all of Canada as a state?
Oh, I must have missed it. I must have blinked when they showed the actual map.
Yeah, this is that middle section of the movie where they're just like throwing everything at the wall. So obviously not all of this stuff sticks, you know?
I mean, I definitely got that, is that they had like a writer's room, and I almost feel that William Joyce was just like, look, guys, anyone that has an idea in this meeting, it's making into the movie. No questions asked.
That might be it, which actually, that's a fun idea. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you did really analyze that middle section of the film, I'm not like, oh, you're going to find like secret messages the filmmakers planted there. But I think you'll find very interesting stuff that they just subconsciously and, you know, subliminally ended up doing.
A lot of ideas that could have ended up being premises for their own movies in that regard. And there was an interesting thing. And when I worked at Disney for those 10 years, I would get invited to these like huge brainstorming sessions that were literally, those are the times that I was working directly next to animators that were on Lion King and that were on like Aladdin, like all of the big flagship movies that I got to work directly with them were these huge brainstorming sessions. And in certain ones of those brainstorming sessions, Disney had something called the no nuke policy. And the no nuke policy meant that it was almost like an improv rules. We are not allowed to say no or not or but, and you're not allowed to point out any flaws whatsoever with anyone's idea. You're only supposed to support and build on ideas. So if someone came up with just something silly, it would be like, oh man, that's so cool. We could also do X, Y, Z. But I don't know. It's an interesting, because there's never been another job I've ever been paid to work at where they were like, all right, for the next hour, there's no bad ideas. Everything that anyone says, we're all going to encourage it and see like where it logically, you know, goes. So maybe it was one of those no nuke sessions and they just followed it all the way through into production.
That could be the case. I guess, you know, for improv, of course, that improv won't work without that. For filmmaking, I guess there's auteur theory, you know?
The rationale behind it, because there were a lot of people that did not agree with no nuke policy, which is its own funny little catch-22, but that the no nuke policy basically stated that someone's bet, and I'm going to all simplify here, but that someone's best idea might be their third or their fifth idea. It probably is not going to be the very first thing that they bring to the table. And that if you shut them down when they suggest their first or their second idea, then there's a good chance they won't even bring up their third or fourth or fifth idea, because they're already be in a completely different headspace. So that it was meant not to just encourage a bunch of random ideas, but that someone else in that session would like open up a little bit more and then share like a really cool idea that they had that they might otherwise not. But this also had a weird indirect effect where if you had a good idea, you knew to never drop that one first, because even in a no nuke session, the exact same human dynamic is at play. Like human brains don't change just because someone says no nuke. So it would still be like the first or second idea you have might be dismissed just in a very positive way. And then people actually give traction to like the third one because that was sort of the implication. It's weird. It was like seeing a law being passed and then everyone just working around that law, but like never actually changing behavior.
Yeah, it's like sometimes the quote unquote dumb idea turns out to be a great idea, you know?
As long as you recommend it third.
Yes, yes, yes. Make it sound funny, that sort of thing. I think I'm pretty much out of my notes. If you have anything else that you wanted to throw out there.
No, I mean, I swear that I almost try to not mention MK Ultra in these reviews anymore, because it just feels like a cheap shot. Like, oh, we're just going to shoehorn MK Ultra in here. This movie's literally about helmets that are being given to orphan children that take over their brain, and that eventually turn into a neural net and take over the entire world. This is a Disney movie. This is clearly MK Ultra sleep deprivation programming. We even mentioned it might even have some of these NLP embedded stories built into it. So I don't know, man. I almost want to start giving movies like MK Ultra ratings out of 5 or something. This one would get a solid 4 out of 5 on the MK Ultra scale.
Okay. I guess that's how I roll my tripometer over the Twilight Zone. another thing that, well, the first episode is super MK Ultra and the Twilight Zone. Where is everybody? Hardcore MK episode. Well, I guess we'll move on. We are hitting Christmas time. What should people do for the Christmas season?
What should they do for the Christmas? Oh, plugs, of course. We just wrapped up Illuminati comic, so I'm not going to pitch that again until we've got it printed and available late into next year. So the other big thing is to just go to ParanoidAmerican.com, look for a bunch of cool merch and shirts and conspiracy card packs and sticker packs and comics and all of the things that you normally are expecting to see. But also, great for those long holiday trips and flights is get the Paranoid American podcast. In which I've got a whole bunch of cool exclusive interviews. I've interviewed David Icke. I've interviewed David Weiss, a.k.a. Flat Earth Dave. I've interviewed Tommy Chong. I've interviewed people that design psychedelics using AI and then take them. All sorts of really cool variety of people. It's almost not even about conspiracy theories. I mean, it is, because everything I talk about devolves into that, but I try and get a lot of non-conspiratorial normies on the show. We just had a homicide detective of 27 years give a live criminal profile breakdown of the Lady Bird Lake killers. And I think he's going to come back on and we're going to break down P. Diddy, maybe LeBron James, and maybe like the new Smiley Assassin. I don't know. But yeah, so go, and wherever you're at on Spotify or Apple or wherever you listen to podcasts, just search for Paranoid American.
All right. As for me, I just talk a bunch of crap about media online and podcast form. The link's under me. It's Podcastio, podcastius.org. I talk about the Twilight Zone, like I mentioned. Really good and really bad films, unfilms, and filth. And what's the other? Oh, Planet of the Apes. We're talking about that on podcast 1999. So Cornelius, you know, he renames himself Cornelius at the end of Meet the Robinsons.
He does.
I'm sitting there thinking, is that a reference to Roddy McDowell, the first Apes movie? I don't know. I've been going ape, man. So that's what I'm thinking about. Who would name themselves Cornelius anyway?
Paranoid. I scribble my life away, driven to write the page. Will it enlight your brain? Give you the flight, my plane. Paper, the highs ablaze. Somewhat of an amazing feel when it's real to real. You will engage it. Your favorite, of course, the lord of an arrangement. I gave you the proper results to hit the pavement. If they get emotional hate, maybe your language, a game, how they playing it well without Lakers. Evade them, whatever the cost, they are the shapeshift. Snakes get decapitated, met is the apex. Execution of flame, you out nuclear bomb, distributed at war, rather gruesome for eyes to see. Max them out, then I light my trees. Blow it off in the face, you're despising me for what though? Calculated and rather cutthroat. Paranoid American must be all the blood smoke for real. Lord, give me a day away, vacate. They wait around to hate whatever they say. Man, it's not in the least bit. We get heavy rotate when the beat hits, so thank us. You're welcome, the niggas for real. You're welcome. They ain't never had a deal. real. You welcome. Man, they lacking appeal. You welcome. Yet they doing it still. You welcome.